This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 28th of May 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today I'm joined by Parul Sehgal, editor of the New York Times Book Review. On the show, we'll be looking at the lives of three different people through books. We have Åsne Seierstedt's biography of Anders Breivik, who led the devastating 2011 massacre in Norway, physician and professor Oliver Sacks' autobiography, which tells stories of scientific discovery and his homosexuality in the 1950s, and we'll discuss The Argonauts, Maggie Nelson's memoir about her relationship with artist Harry Dodge. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Parul. Great to have you with us on the Monocle Arts Review. We're going to start the programme with One of Us, the story of Anders Breivik and the massacre in Norway, a new biography of the man who killed nearly 80 people in Utøya and Oslo back in 2011. It's an astonishing achievement, this book by Åsne Seierstedt. And I wondered, Parul, first of all, whether you think that it's really propelled or confirmed her place in the sort of the canon of great journalists working at the moment.
I mean, I think so. This book is being spoken about as an heir to Norman Mailer's The Executioner's Song, to Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, these sort of classics of narrative nonfiction and true crime. And it's being said to even surpass them, because what she does in this book is, you know, she doesn't create an anti-hero. She actually does the really, really difficult work of trying to understand where he came from, the culture's general complicity in creating him, and how this crime happened at a very, very deep level that really, you know, shies away from romance. Like the book has an incredible sort of feeling of Greek tragedy, this feeling of inevitability, this feeling of, this juggernaut that can't be stopped. So it's beautiful. Like, it's beautifully reported. And it comes from a place of incredible wisdom, I think.
And now, amongst that, the beautiful reporting and all of that wisdom, as you say, that it's pretty harrowing. I mean, it's a very tough thing to actually read. Not just because of the detail, but there's some absolutely heartbreaking detail of the day of the attack itself. Did you find it a difficult book to actually read in that respect as well, Parul?
Oh, it's so grim. It's very, very hard reading. But at the same time, as you're reading it, it feels important. It doesn't feel manipulative. It doesn't feel gratuitous. Because what she does essentially is, you know, she tells the story of Breivik from his childhood on, but interwoven are the stories of many of his victims from their childhood. So you do connect very deeply with these people that you know are going to die. And I mean, as you're doing this, it's that feeling of Greek tragedy. You know it's coming. You know it's coming. But what she does is she gives you, you know, she lets you feel their loss in a way that, you know, Norman Mailer was never really interested in who the victims were. Truman Capote was much more enamored of the murderers than the family that he killed in Cold Blood. So again, it's a much more deeper and bigger book.
You often find there's a tendency or a drive, and maybe the reader is complicit because they want this answer, to be able to label, you know, the proponent of some of these atrocities as evil. And is that another one of the pieces of journalistic and authorial skill, is to manage to sidestep that, to not just bandy about labels, but to try and build a more complete picture that's perhaps unusual in this sort of work, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think what she does is really complicate the idea of evil and complicate the idea of violence. I think Carlo Viknausgaard wrote a beautiful piece about this book in The New Yorker last week. And, you know, sort of talking about how what happened, or what one interpretation, what Seierstedt's interpretation is, that Breivik projected his feelings of inadequacy, of smallness, of invisibility onto Norway. And he began to become very, very concerned with what he thought were the threats of feminists and the threats of Islam. And so this idea of his abjection and his feelings of being ignored and being abused and being neglected, and sort of, you know, what he did with those emotions, what he did with those feelings, And so how she creates that and how she links that to the crime, I think, are really, they feel important. And in this way, this book joins other classics like David Cullen's book, Columbine, about the school shootings, to sort of say, how are these people created? And generally, what the best of these books find is that there are long legacies of family violence and trauma.
And Paul, I wonder, you know, the book is called One of Us. Do you think that the book also encapsulates something or is instructive about, you know, contemporary Norway? Or is it very important to read it and to understand and try and make sense of what happened on that day in 2011, you know, without making generalizations about, you know, about the country, about the populace more broadly?
Yeah, I mean, I think she's inviting us to sort of look at some of the sort of seamier sides of Norway, the attraction to certain kinds of racism, the certain kinds of reactionary politics. So there is that, but there's also One of Us in the sense of the way that she writes about Breivik's childhood and the way, you know, he had this incredibly problematic relationship with his mother, was deeply unhinged and possibly sexually very inappropriate with the child. And, you know, there were efforts to save him. There were efforts to take him out of that family situation. Nothing came of it. So this feeling of One of Us actually has this chilling sense that, you know, this could have been averted. This was not an inevitability in this sense, that there were very clear signs that something was incredibly wrong with him. And so, yeah, I mean, it's this feeling of that there are no monsters, really. There are no easy, as you said, there are no easy people to demonize and villainize and keep outside of ourselves in this way.
That book is One of Us, the story of Anders Breivik and the massacre in Norway. It's out now, published by Virago here in the UK and Farah Strauss Giroux in the United States. Paul, let's move on. Let's move on now to On the Move, appropriately enough, A Life, the autobiography of the physician and professor of neurology, Oliver Sacks. Now, Sacks has written some astonishing books before, which many of our listeners will be familiar with. The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, Awakenings, of course. How would you sort of categorize this as against those? Is it a departure? Does it make more sense almost of some of the writings we've seen from him before?
I mean, I think so. I'm really fond of this book. So Sacks has written, you know, a number of memoirs about his childhood and, you know, about his dabbling in drugs and about his migraines. He's always mined himself for material. But this book is just sort of like his biggest, most intimate, most vulnerable book. In April, Sacks announced that he was dying of terminal cancer. This will probably be the last book we have. And it feels really fitting and beautiful that he's written about stuff that he's never written about. He talks about his sexuality. You know, he's gay. I don't think has ever really written about it with this kind of honesty and vulnerability. So there's that. But then we also get like a large sense of this man's sort of lust for life, his love of motorcycles, his love of weightlifting, his love of the body, his love of the mysteries of medicine. So it really is a really lovely look at a life really fully and richly lived.
Well, I was going to say, often people, when they read memoir, or certainly when they write criticism of memoir, they talk about the desire to you know, make people feel almost nostalgic for those experiences themselves, or that they have never undertaken them. And there's so much excitement, and he really captures particularly the thrills of his youth in quite a compelling way, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's that, and it's also just, so as a child, his nickname was Inky, because he loved to write and he loved to read. And I think some of the most beautiful parts of this book for me weren't even his travels or those adventures. It was just the pleasure he takes in language and the sort of obsessive graphomania that he has and this desire to find stories, build stories, and how necessary that becomes to his understanding of medicine. It's incredibly exciting and moving to read this. And of course, there are his relationships with his patients, which are lovely and problematic, and some of them love it when he writes about them. Some of them can't stand it. And, you know, he writes about it with a great deal of affection and candor.
Well, let me ask you about that candor, because one sense is that, you know, Sacks would be an incredibly sensitive and respectful character, certainly when talking, for example, to patients of his. And yet he writes about them and his own experiences with a candor, sometimes a frankness. It goes almost beyond that. Do you think that that's one of the interesting sort of almost paradoxes, that this is a very sensitive man who can write in an extremely refreshing, open, and rather often maybe almost too lucid a way?
Yeah. yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And he's been controversial, right? He's been controversial for sort of writing about some of his patients with this, like, as if they were specimens. Specimen is a word that keeps coming up, with this, you know, clinical detachment and almost cruelty sometimes. He shows too much and he sees them without that layer of sort of love and protection. But yeah, it is interesting because he turns that complicating gaze on himself in ways and can write about himself with immense, you know, detachment. But then he also is very coy. And I think this book is interesting to me sometimes in what it doesn't do. For example, Sachs writes in one sentence after like this rapturous night he spends with someone, he goes, and then for 35 years, I was celibate. No explanation, doesn't go into it. But then he builds all this other stuff around it. So you're left thinking, okay, what were those reasons? What happened? And he kind of leaves it to you to sort of puzzle him out in that way. So yeah, all of these things produce like a really, really interesting tension. It is an incredibly flawed, imperfect, sort of very endearing book.
That's On the Move, A Life. It's out now, published by Picador or Knopf Publishing Group in the USA. Paul, let's move on and finish, in fact, with our final book, The Argonauts, Maggie Nelson's memoir of her relationship with the artist Harry Dodge. Now, this book, I guess, explores, well, it's kind of about family. Is this a book about families, I guess, is the first question.
Yeah, it is a book about families, and it's about families in transition. And so the book is about Maggie Nelson as a critic and a poet and was in a relationship with the artist Harry Dodge. And she became pregnant just as Dodge started taking testosterone treatments and having top surgery. And Dodge didn't want to transition to a man so much as was just becoming more gender fluid, is the way that he describes it. So she's describing what happens to your family when you live this joyfully queer life and suddenly you start looking more and more like a bourgeois family. She's pregnant. Harry's looking more like a man. What does this mean? Who are they now? Can they still be radical? Are they just, you know, looking like everybody else? And it's a twisty little book that, you know, really investigates what we mean by these terms and what it means to subvert ideas of what family is and what domesticity is and what creativity is.
And Paul, do you think that the book skillfully manages to weave in a lot of these themes that are, you know, universal themes about, you know, marriage, about gender, about sex, about differences between people? These are things that, you know, everybody can relate to. Is it a book that, you know, will speak to an audience of that breadth?
Absolutely. I mean, there's this one moment where she's talking about Harry's transition and her pregnancy, and she writes, "We're just two animals watching each other age." And it really has this sense of sweetness. Like, I mean, this book can seem outré, can seem, you know, far from people's experiences, but, you know, it really feels very universal. It feels very accessible. It's a very fun book to read. Her sort of unit of composition is the sentence, and it's very aphoristic, and there are lots of slithery fragments, and she's forever contradicting herself and fighting with Harry. And it's a very sweet, tough, but, you know, kind of sexy and fun book to read about how all these identities are really much more unstable than we like to think they are.
And it's intriguing, Paul, that the book is obviously entitled The Argonauts, and there's this notion of the Argonauts that replacing each part of their ship, the Argo, piece by piece during the voyage, so they ended with a new ship without ever having changed its name or its form. And there's this idea about, you know, transitioning, about change, quite a profound question, in fact. And as well as being funny and sassy and sexy and fun, it does delve into some of those deeper questions.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a book that, I mean, it's not even just deeper questions. It's, you know, really rigorous in its own way. There's a lot of philosophy in it. There's a lot of queer theory, but it's all sort of linked and woven together by this form and by this sort of tone that she has. That's just sort of, again, I think The Argonauts is the perfect title because it does feel like a quest. It does feel like she is on this journey, you know, as, you know, waiting for her baby to arrive, watching her partner transition, just the two of them aging, the two of them writing, the two of them figuring out what does it mean to be a mother and creative? What does it mean to be all of these things. And it just has this loose, really, again, I think the thing is, it is so much more accessible than it sounds. And I just, I think it's deep, but also just really, really lovely, pleasurable, and it's only very easy reading.
Wonderful stuff. That's The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson, which is out this month and published by Grey Wolf Press. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. Parul Segal in New York, thanks as ever for joining us. Great to speak with you here on the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks too to our producer, Holly Fisher, researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again tomorrow for this week's film review. But for now, from all the team, thanks very much for listening.